On this week's Ludini Rock and Roll Circus podcast, we are going to run down, discuss, and dissect the most eclectic rock artists and bands of all time. Also, Eric Roger from the band Royal Honey will join us to talk about SOS 2020. It's all coming up right now. Get ready to rock out with your talk out. It's the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. My name is Lou Lombardi, a.k.a. Ludini, and we do this thing every week here, live on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, and hopefully soon we'll be doing some Instagram and some TikTok as well, so we'll let you know as that stuff comes up. As always, we pick a great topic. Well, we think it's great, right, Lily?
We always think our topic's
great. Yeah, we pick a cool topic, and we discuss it amongst ourselves. We take comments and questions from you guys as well live. Tonight, we are going to be talking about these bands and artists that seem to kind of defy genres or be able to cross genres. Like, real easy, completely change their thing up, and then have total success. People love them anyways. It doesn't really matter. So there's a handful, 10 or so of folks like that we're going to be talking about tonight. So stick around for that. Welcome our fans at Rock Rage Radio, rockrageradio.com. Get the app, everybody. You can listen to great guitar-driven rock 24/7 on rockrageradio.com. Just download that app. Totally free. You know, it's a no-brainer, right, Lil?
Legit.
And speaking of Rock Rage Radio, Lily V6 from Rock Rage Radio is my co-host.
What's up?
And Lily, what's you have your show too, so tell them about your show.
I do have my show. It's Hot Licks with Lily 6, Thursdays at 6 p.m. Eastern on Rock Rage Radio. Again, you can get the app for free, download it to your smartphone, or go to rockrageradio.com.
Cool. I want to give a shout out to our sponsor, Wolf's Customs. Go to wolfscustoms.online. There's no reason, guys, to be out there getting up on stages, and that's starting to happen a little bit more, or doing the Zoom concerts or whatever you're doing with the same boring looking guitar that the last three bands had, okay? So that's where Wolf's Customs come in. Those guys can do a custom paint job on your guitar and really make you stand out. They do great work. This isn't cheesy crap. This is done totally professional. Talk to my buddy, Chris Thunderwolf Dotson. He will absolutely hook you up. Go to their website, and you can see great samples. Our brother from Another Mother, Keith the Hawk Hawkins, has actually had them do some work on his drums. And they work with all kinds of musical instruments as well. So check them out at wolfscustoms.online. So this is a good time to talk about our special guest today. We have Eric Roger from the band Royal Honey. And also we wanted Eric to talk about his charity, SOS 2020. So Eric, welcome. How are you?
What's up, Ludini and Miss Six? How are you guys?
We're doing good, man. We're doing good. Why don't you tell us a little bit, to give us a little sort of like Reader's Digest nutshell bio on you.
On me? I'm in a band called Royal Honey. I'm the guitarist in that band. We've been around since 2018. Play all over the Pittsburgh area. And last year was kind of a bummer, huh? not a whole lot of shows going on.
Yeah.
What we did was we focused our attention elsewhere. We worked on some videos. We did a couple of shows here and there, but for the most part, you know, I spent the last 4 months of the year working on this song, kind of an accident. But I had this idea to maybe, it didn't sound like a Royal Honey song. So I took it to our mix engineer, Bob McCutcheon, over to Vault, and asked him if he thought it might be a good idea to try to do some good with this. And he was into the idea. So we kind of ran it up the flagpole and invited, I don't know, 25, 30 bands, to see if they wanted to participate and sing some backing vocals. And we had over 60 musicians on this thing, and all from the Pittsburgh, most from the Pittsburgh area. They all had Pittsburgh roots of some sort. You know, we had some remote contributions from like Keith Nelson from Buck Cherry and the guys from Rusted Root and Jim Dofka, who's down in West Virginia.
Yeah, I know Jimmy. Yeah.
All kinds of contributions. Yeah. It was awesome. The whole community came together to basically show our support for, you know, struggling venues, sound engineers, all promoters, everybody who's just in a, you know, kind of in a crapper right now.
Yeah, of course. So tell us, what is the charity and what are you guys trying to accomplish?
So we're basically trying to raise awareness and some funds for the struggling industry, the infrastructure. Our venues, our promoters, our sound engineers, our support staff, anyone who's involved kind of with the back end infrastructure side of things. I mean, the bands don't have anywhere to play right now because, you know, you can't have groups of people.
Right.
You know, and so then we were, you know, we were just kind of sitting around thinking, well, even if the bands do get through this, is there going to be anywhere left to play? The Rex had just closed, Brillo Box had closed, Howlers. And I mean, you know, these are all Pittsburgh clubs. And I know your audience reaches, you know, beyond Pittsburgh. So, you know, forgive me for that. But this was, you know, born and bred out of the Pittsburgh music scene. And our goal was to raise awareness, was to try to stimulate some people, maybe putting some more pressure on Congress, because this was prior to the stimulus relief bill being signed. You know, we were still in this effort to try to get people to take action and, you know, put some pressure on their representatives and to support the Save Our Stages Act, which was part of the bigger overall stimulus bill. And that actually happened. That all got done in December.
That's cool.
And that was awesome. That was like $15 billion right there for venues and that side of the industry. But our work wasn't done. We figured that was probably a Band-Aid. So, you know, we're still trying to raise some funds. We're selling the song. There's a matching contribution coming from the Ryan McCutcheon Rhythm 19 Fund. But, you know, mostly, basically, we're trying to raise awareness and get people working towards the same endeavors that we are, which is, you know, take some action. Let's help these people, because ultimately the bands are standing by with these club owners, with these venue owners, with these support staff, with the, you know, even, you know, support staff like waitresses and bartenders and stuff who don't have work right now because these places are closed.
Yeah.
You know, it's a huge trickle down, you know, infrastructure that's been affected, and they were the first to close and they'll be the last to reopen. And we're just trying to help out. So we've got all the money funneling through NEVA. We didn't want to reinvent the wheel. We didn't want to have to touch any money, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah, it makes it a little more legit. People worried about it. I got you.
Yeah, it's very legit. The flip side to that, which kind of sucks, is that not everybody qualifies for NEVA membership. So that's kind of a smaller issue that we're a little bit bummed out about. And we also couldn't keep the funds necessarily in the local area. Like, everything goes to NEVA, gets distributed nationally.
Okay.
And so that's okay. We feel like we're still helping.
Of course.
And we do think that Pittsburgh, you know, will get a benefit from that. You know, but the, you know, the long and short of it is that not every single, like, I mean, you know, I'll give you a couple of examples. Excuses, which is, you know, kind of Royal Honey's home base on the south side.
Mm-hmm.
They simply didn't qualify because, you know, they're primarily a bar and a restaurant, and they do some music on the side.
Right.
There are some private clubs, I think, like the Subalpine. You know, like, we didn't have control over that, and I wish that everybody would have. So what we're trying to do now is we're trying to figure out other ways, other creative ways to get some help, some support, or at least some publicity and recognition, and trying to see what we can do for some of the other clubs. But, you know, as a whole, we're pretty happy with the effort, and we're pretty happy with the results that we've gotten, and we feel like we're doing some good, even if it didn't cover everybody 100%.
Yeah, these things are like that, Eric. They just there's only so much you can do, and it's a giant problem. And all we can do is the best we can do. How do folks get more information or find out how they can get involved? What's the best way for people to do that?
Yeah, one single site. It's www.sos2020pgh.org. And that's sos2020pgh.org. That has links for everything, including like part of the initiative was to actually try to get venues and maybe some promoters who weren't already NEVA members to become NEVA members.
Okay.
And again, we actually handheld or followed a couple of people through that process, and some were accepted, some were not. That wasn't our call, but that's part of it. And then there's information on how people can donate directly to NEVA. There's information on how they can buy the song, and if they buy the song, then that's matched dollar for dollar up to $2,000. So if we sell 2,000 copies of this song for $1 a piece, immediately it's $4,000 going into that into the emergency relief fund. So, that was the goal. That was the initial baby step.
Every little bit helps, guys. So check it out. Go to sos2020pgh.org. And see how you can get. Is there any other ways for people to get involved as well, other than giving money? Is there any kind of way for people to volunteer with stuff? Or,
We asked for a lot of volunteers. So, kind of back up a little bit. We shotgunned this. I mean, the idea didn't even hit me until September, and it was mid October by the time we were able to do anything tangible.
Takes time, yeah.
And then, being that the song is actually called SOS 2020, we knew that we wanted to have it out by the end of the year. We missed that by about a week. We aimed for Christmas, and CD Baby needed a 2-week lead time. So we had the song done. The video was done all by Christmas, and we hit January 8th, 2021 release date. So that came out about a week and a half ago, maybe 2 weeks at this point. I don't even know today's date, Jesus. but it came out, and along the way, we had a lot of help. There were a lot of people involved. We had obviously the Vault Studios gave the bulk of the donation in studio time. We had Flying Scooter Productions, which was a promo company, donate. Build the Scene. All the web interfacing and all the web design for us. Again, this is all on a donation. Alexis Art and Design, Alexis Salinas over at Alexis Art and Design did the whole video. And if you haven't watched that video yet, please do, because that poor girl hadn't slept in about 3 weeks putting that together. And it is fantastic. It's all, she's got all 60 plus musicians who contributed, all 27 bands are part of that video. And again, that includes, Liz and Patrick from Rusted Root. That includes Tim Amar and Jim Dofka. And like I said, Keith Nelson, he emailed or mailed his contribution from LA.
Cool.
And he's all over the video. He holds up a sign at the end that says, "Pittsburgh, I love you." So that was really cool to have
That's
a founding
cool.
member of Buck Cherry.
Yeah.
On, play on a song that you wrote.
I wanted to ask, is the song, can I play it? Because I could probably play it and share the video.
I can send you an MP3 or...
No, I can play it right now. I have YouTube.
You can do that. Yeah, it's up to you, man.
Here's what I was going to do. We typically don't play music on here, and hopefully I don't get a strike. We have to be very careful.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go ahead and do it because you're on. And it's a great cause, and I want everybody to check it out. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring it up here, and I'm going to where is my share? See if we can make this bad boy work. Hold on a second here.
While you're doing that, I'll talk a little bit. So we decided to roll this into a concert series as well.
Oh,
and so we've
cool.
got four shows. They're live streams. But if you're familiar with, I think everybody in Pittsburgh knows pianos and stuff, right?
No, now, you mean pianos and that.
Yeah. Now, now known as And Stuff Music.
Of course.
So they've got a new club called the Next Door Cafe that, that was taken off right as COVID hit. And so we're going to do, 4 weeks of shows with all, containing SOS, 2020 participants. And we're calling it the SOS Pittsburgh concert series. So
cool. Well, here it goes. This is Save Our Stages by like pretty much everybody. So check it out, everybody.
Let's go. for rock and roll.
Nice. Nice. Very cool.
Saw you digging it.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Cool. And so if you guys dug that and you appreciate what the heck's going on in the world here with musicians who are, you know, and these venues, we've got it. As Eric, I like how you put it, that will the infrastructure be there? And that's the idea, so that when things are able to do stuff, we don't want to be like, well, everybody's like jonesing to play, but there's no place to play, you know. So these guys are doing their best to, you know, mitigate this and make sure that there are venues out there. So, Eric, really applaud what you're doing, man. It's very, very cool. And once again, what's that website again, Eric?
It's sos2020pgh.org. And that also has information on it with regards to the upcoming concert series that that Rocky just put together to kind of piggyback on all of this.
Awesome.
So there's 4 weeks. 4 weeks of shows starting on the 28th of January, three bands apiece, quick 20-minute sets, and you know we're just it's going to be professionally live streamed. So, you know, it's like $3 a show or $10 for the whole series. We're just trying to get again. This is another example of you know this club called the Next Door Cafe. You know, they had barely been off the ground. They had barely launched when COVID hit. And so I don't know if they have had any shows there. So giving them a little publicity here.
Cool.
And Stuff Music's a big sponsor of this. And
We love In Stuff Music.
And still, anything that comes through is still going to Neva. So, You know, nobody has made a dime off of this.
All right. Yeah, that's really important for everybody to know, too. This is like, you know, the guys aren't lining their pockets. This is a legitimate situation where they're actually doing something good for everybody. So, guys, check it out. Go to sos2020pgh.org and get involved. Help them out. Eric, thanks a lot, man. We are going to go ahead and get on with our topic tonight. If Eric, you're welcome to stick around, brother, if you got a little time.
Yeah, I do. I'll stick around, guys.
Oh, cool, man. All right. So, the topic tonight is to talk about these bands that they can do anything. Artists and bands that can like go from genre to genre and like
it still works.
It still works. Like that's crazy.
Kind of not like AC/DC who sticks with their same thing every single album. Like, although I love them and I still love what they do. Cannot switch it up.
You know, as I was thinking about this topic, it seems to me that now I know there's a lot of modern alternative bands that kind of float around a lot. But in terms of the big famous rock bands, it seems like if you go back more in the past, it seems that there was more acceptance of eclecticism.
Oh, yeah.
And like one of the bands on my list, who's kind of the progenitors of all of this, were able to really do a lot of different music and get over no matter what they did. So I won't start. I'll let you start.
No, you go ahead and start.
Okay, I want to start.
I kind of want to guess who your band is you announce it.
You know, who do you think I'm talking about?
I'm gonna guess you're talking about Yes.
Nope, I'm talking about the Beatles. The Beatles start out as kind of like a, you know, bubblegum boy band, right?
You're not kidding. Okay, I'm with you.
You know what I mean? Just
they're like
you know,
the Backstreet Boys.
Love Me Do, and you know, hold your hand. I want to hold your hand, and like you know, it's like very kind of like la 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 la, and you know, it's all about the haircuts and the little suits that they wear and the style and the girls all screaming. Ah, who's your favorite Beatle? Ah, Paulie, don't dream me.
My God.
You know, it's all of that stuff. And then as these guys kind of start to get a little bit, they get some success, and instead of just spending it on drugs, notice I said just. They took control of what they wanted to do musically. And as the records started to progress, you started to, you know, it was like, what are these guys doing? They're like really thinking about stuff. They're bringing in sounds that like weren't really associated with pop music. I mean, the guys had really deep musical roots. They loved a lot of different kind of music, including church music, classical music, the sort of folky music that was floating around as they were growing up, kids' songs and things like that. And they were, they just had such amazing ears. And they all brought something another, like, you know, different influences as they went along, and grew and grew and matured and matured and matured and matured to where you get records like Rubber Soul, where they were like Rubber Soul, which is like, these guys are like really getting out there. And then you get, you know, then you're moving on to, like, you know, eventually Sgt. Pepper's comes out, mm-hmm. which is like, there's the orchestras on. It was really kind of not done that way. They were also one of the first bands to really exploit the studio and be able to do things with, like, tape loops, and which now that's done digitally, right, Eric? But done very, very well. I mean, a lot of bands are like, a lot of guys, Ed Sheeran, you know, that's his whole shtick is, mm-hmm. is the looping and everything like that. But it starts way back. It starts way back then. And if you listen to their records, you hear folk, you hear country and Western, you hear heavy rock, like tracks like, Helter Skelter, you know what I mean? They'd like, you know, they're sort of the progenitors of everything, and they could pull it off and get over, and people liked it. That's the big thing. There's a lot of hack bands that, you know, could, you know, do a little of this and a little of that, but really being able to get over and really move people, no matter kind of what you're beautiful. I mean, they have written probably, you know, one of the greatest ballads that was ever written, Yesterday, the most covered song, I believe, in all of pop music.
Mm-hmm. Legit.
You know, and this is a beautiful ballad with, you know, very complex chord changes. This is the same guys that did Hard Day's Night. You know, it's like,
I want to hold your hand,
you know.
I got a question for you. With in the studio, you're talking about how they were innovators in the studio, and I absolutely agree with you. Do you think that was George Martin driving that train, or do you think that was them making him become an inventor because of what they wanted?
I would say that they had more power in that.
I think that they wanted to do sounds, and I've heard interviews with George Martin saying exactly that. That, like, they wanted things, and he had to sit down and think, like, well, how would we accomplish this? You know, and then that's when the cutting and the looping. Like, for instance, A Day in the Life. A lot of people do not know about this. That song, the way it is, the way that was put out, is essentially John Lennon's demo. That's just it. It's keep playing guitar and singing. And Martin and Paul McCartney put their stuff in and mixed around, had Ringo play drum, and boom. They, you know, but essentially that's what it is. It's like one of these things was really assembled in the studio, and it's just pure freaking magic.
It is magic, and it was a mash. It's almost like a mashup. It was like the origin of the mashup of two of their own songs,
yeah,
right?
That's a good point. Yeah. Yeah, but so I would list them right off the bat as, you know, very eclectic, very willing to experiment and do it really, really well. No matter what they did, no matter how they brought in things. I mean, there's arguably a few misses. Revolution Number 9. There's a few missed things that some people are
but
like,
but that's what you do with experimentation.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, right. And I sort of would argue that if you don't do Revolution Number 9, then you don't really get some of the other stuff. So that's a sort of experimental piece there. They were willing to do stuff like that as well. But and you got Rocky Raccoon and Helter Skelter on the same freaking record.
Right.
You know, it's
well,
like,
there could be an argument that whole White Album could have been narrowed down to the best single album. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, that is very true. A lot of critics have said that about a lot of double albums. But that was the thing. Oh, we're going to do a double album. And some bands did triple albums. You know. Damn it, we're going to beat it. We're going to get triple albums. But anyway, so I put the Beatles down as my first pick. Okay. What do you have?
Well, I'm going to go way to the extreme opposite of that. And I'm going to go with Bathory, a Swedish extreme metal band, considered one of the pioneers of black metal and Viking metal. Their fourth album, Blood, Fire, Death, followed their original sort of extreme metal, but then they changed it with... variant styles. They would add slower tempos, acoustic passages, choral background singing. And then this is when they started to incorporate the lyrics with the Viking stuff, where they were sort of transitioning into the Viking metal.
Viking metal?
Yes.
Is that an actual genre, Lily?
It is.
I think you're making that up.
I'm not. Ask a lot of people about it. And they included a lot of Viking Norse mythology in their lyrics.
If it wasn't already, it should be.
Right. No, it's truly a thing. Then they abandoned the black metal sound completely for their fifth recording, or their fifth album, Hammerheart, in 1990. That is cited as the first Viking metal album. So Viking metal goes far back as to 1990. So, they continued the Viking metal style for most of their career, but they did experiment with thrash metal style on Requiem and Octagon, two different albums that came out after that. So they have several different styles in there, started as extreme metal, went to some Viking metal, and then also experimented with thrash metal. So I did want to include a heavier band in this because I didn't want to just do all the usuals, which are pretty much the rest of my list. So,
okay. So Bathory, huh?
Yes. Named after one of the greatest serial killers of all time, who was a female.
Elizabeth Bathory.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, she was a pretty nasty bitch.
She's one of my idols.
What? We need to get Lily some new heroes here. I
like that one.
I'm so concerned about Lily here with her.
I like my serial killers.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, I don't want to get into any of that. We're going to hit some of these funny ones at the end.
Okay.
I'm going to talk about this guy too, because this is when you think of sort of guys that crossing genres and doing this. I think at first blush, this guy has not come to mind because he's known. I mean, most people think of him as a blues guitar player, but Eric Clapton has done a gazillion different things. I mean, he started out in that sort of 60s mod rock thing with the Yardbirds, okay? Mm-hmm. Then he goes and gets involved with John Mayall's Blues Breakers, does one of the most influential, arguably one of the most influential blues rock albums of all time, and becomes, you know, then this is where you start to see the moniker, you know, spray painted around Clapton is God, okay? Then he and Ginger Baker and Jack Bruce arguably invent hard rock / heavy metal with Cream. And this is a lot of people's favorite Clapton period. So already we've gone from a sort of 60s pop thing to hardcore blues to a heavy, all bordering on hard rock metal thing with Cream. So we've done three already. So after that's over, there's a short-lived respite with Blind Faith. And then he gets into his more sort of singer-songwriter-y Americana thing with Delaney and Bonnie, and doing these kind of records with a sort of a much lighter but more more textures in terms of the arrangements. And all through the 70s, he's sort of like, he's a pop star with like I Shot the Sheriff, right? Layla is a kind of big rock track, but that's a pretty like intense song with a lot of different chord changes. It's a long way from the Yardbirds, the Blues Breakers, or even Cream. There's a lot going on in Layla. I'm not even talking about the outro. You know, that's a whole other thing.
And excluding the piano.
Yeah. So at this point in time, through the 70s, he gets very interested in country music. So he's doing songs by J.J. Cale. He's influenced by people like Don Williams. These songs become hits. There's nothing that he's doing that isn't like keeping him on top. Now, yes, I know he had a lot of problems. There's concert video of him laying on the stage while the band is playing because he's so drunk. Yes, we're not talking about that.
I mean,
that's a different kind of collection.
Who hasn't done that?
Yeah, and then the 80s rolls around, and he puts out records like Behind the Sun and The Journeyman, and he's back on rock radio again. Like, all of a sudden, like, Clapton, he's rocking out. Yeah, we love it, you know? And the 90s come in, and he has, again, major pop hits. Wins his first Grammy with Tears in Heaven. I Could Change the World, I Could Save the World. What's the song?
I think it's If I Can Change the World.
Yeah, If I Could Change the World. Big, you know, songs in movies and all kinds of stuff like this. Does the Unplugged record, right? And, you know, who isn't sick of hearing that? Come on. I mean, admit it. Everybody's tired of the Eric Clapton Unplugged.
I think unless you're obsessed.
That's how freaking famous it was, and he was able to knight those. And then he comes, kind of comes full circle, with From the Cradle, and returns to his blues roots, which where he sort of has landed since. But I mean, you talk about a guy who could jump from thing to thing to thing, and just like
effortless,
just effortless, and like almost everything he did was totally accepted. I mean, yes, everybody has a few misses, but did you want to? I think Eric wanted to chime in on that. Do you want to talk about that for a second?
No, I was actually going to ask you a question. You mentioned J.J. Cale. Is that relation to John Cale from Velvet Underground?
No, J.J. Cale is just like a like kind of an American singer-songwriter. He wrote the song Cocaine, She Don't Lie, She Don't Lie, Cocaine.
Oh, I did not know that.
He had a lot of people. Yeah, Eric's covered a few J.J. Cale songs. He's just one of those guys that, like, people... He's not really known. Although he just put out his own records, he's not really known as an artist in and of himself. He's mainly known as... You know who... you know John Hiatt is?
No.
Okay. John Hiatt's another one of these guys that, like... Yes, he has a song, Perfectly Good Guitar, that DVE plays, but... He's primarily known for writing songs that people like Bonnie Raitt did and won Grammys with and stuff like that. J.J. Cale is of that ilk, the kind of guy. He writes the songs, mostly other people.
Like early Neil Diamond.
Yeah. That's a good comparison. I mean, I'm going to put down Eric Clapton as just like able to go float around and kind of do whatever. And like, everybody's like, yeah, Eric, we love you.
Is everybody like that?
Yeah, I don't know.
Alrighty then.
All the cool people are. I'm just kidding.
I guess.
Don't you want to be cool?
I'm always cool. I don't need to follow the crowd to be cool, as we all know.
The crowd follows you.
Exactly. Every day of the week. So next on my list is Frank Zappa.
Heard of him.
I know. I think he is one of the most eclectic artists, considering the number of genres not only have they influenced him, he's influenced by everything. It doesn't matter what it is. Music, what have you. Mothers of Invention years, he combined psychedelic rock, blues, classical music, surf rock, jazz, and musique concrète, among other genres. And later on in his career, he focused more on the electronic classical music. So he was a nut.
I remember reading an interview with him towards the end where that's what he was doing. He was composing electronic classical music. And he was saying that what he was really interested in was he was composing pieces that could not physically be played by a human.
Yeah.
He was just, that was just interesting.
Well, he's basically
him.
An alien. Yeah. So, you know, he also, he produced almost all of his albums. That's 60 plus albums. Directed films and music videos, designed album covers, and he's considered one of the most innovative and stylistically diverse rock musicians of the era. And his career spans over 30 years, so there's that.
I mean, wildly influential.
Very strange man, but I do love him.
Yeah, there is a really cool television spot with him on when he was very, very young.
I've seen this.
On the Steve Allen Show. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is how he clanked in. Frank Zappa was. And he plays the bicycle.
Yep.
I don't know how to describe it. Go watch the video. It's on YouTube.
He was literally influenced by everything.
It's really amazing. The way this guy could think and the ideas that he would have. Dweezil's a dynamite guitar player. Mm. And I saw the Zappa play Zappa. Did you ever see that, Eric? Did you go see the Zappa play Zappa thing?
I did not see that, but I saw videos of it. Yeah, man, he's phenomenal.
Yeah, he's a monster. And that's the thing that, like, Frank did. But anyways, Dweezil is not Frank.
No.
But he's a great guitar player. And what people people forget about Frank is because he did all this crazy stuff and played the bicycle, and he's a monster guitar player. He did a series of albums called Shut Up and Play Your Guitar and, like, Son of Shut Up and Play Your Guitar. And I think they came in boxes, so it was like a 4 or 5 disc set of him just... You know, just doing guitar instrumental stuff. Monster guitar player. Very cool tone. Very, very different approach. Very cool. Gee whiz, that's a good pick, man. Frank freaking Zappa.
Biggest weirdo in rock.
The biggest weirdo in rock.
Still like him, though.
You want to, who do you got next?
Let me do another one?
Yeah, do another one.
I'll do Beck.
Beck, not Jeff.
Not Jeff, just Beck.
There was another
little weirdo.
I have an old Guitar Player magazine right here somewhere, and it on the cover it says Beck, not Jeff. Like they were interviewing Beck, but not Jeff. So they had great. they had to like guitar players, you know, like get them under control. Oh, Jeff Beck. No, not that Beck.
Wrong Beck.
Wrong Beck.
This is a different Beck. As everyone knows, he became popular in the 1990s. He had the lo-fi style and became known for creating musical collages of wide-ranging genres. He did folk, funk, soul, hip-hop, electronic, alternative rock, country, psychedelia. He has also released 14 studio albums, three which were released on indie labels. And he actually started out with R&B in clubs. And he would just... Not R&B, excuse me, hip-hop and folk in clubs. And he would just sit there and just sort of like poetry reading type places, little coffee shops, stuff like that. And he started out with hip-hop, and he is now what he's doing today. But he does like the drum machine samples, sound effects, live instrumentation stuff. He's just, he hasn't been around that long, not as long as Frank, but he's on that same like wavelength as Frank, I think. So
I think, yeah, definitely in terms of like trying to
do everything,
you know, not he's there's a lot. I think there's artists that are just not satisfied. You know, they just I've done that. I've already done that. I want to do something different. This is something that's really true of like actors. A lot of actors do not like to play, don't want to play the same type or the same role again. Mm-hmm. I've done that. I did that. I did this type of villain. I want to do this type of thing or whatever. So,
Val Kilmer.
I look at Beck as one of those guys who's like kind of like always wanting to move forward, always wanting to do the next, try something new. I am going to mention, I know this is on your list. Is this guy on your list?
Yeah, but you can go.
Okay, let's talk about the 12 ages of David Bowie. Okay? Because this guy just, I mean, what a lot of people don't realize is David Bowie started out as a saxophone player. That's his, like instrument. That's his primary, I'm making air quotes, sorry.
When you do that.
But when he breaks out as a, he's in that sort of acoustic psychedelia era. He breaks out with Space Oddity. That's really the song that kind of like puts him on the map.
Mm-hmm.
Then he drops all that and does The Man Who Sold the World. And, there is a film out right now about the transition from this era to the next era, which we're going to talk about in a second. But the man who sold the world, he could not get arrested with this with this record. People just thought it was too weird. They were like, "What the? Everybody's like, oh yeah, Space Oddity. Why don't you do more of that?" but the song "The Man Who Sold the World" is a great song, and this is the album where he's sitting with laying with the dress.
Mm-hmm.
It, when I was a kid, I didn't realize. I was just a little, like, young guy, you know, getting into music. And I thought, well, who's this chick? I said chick. I know it's not politically correct. Kiss my ass. Then comes what, again, I think we talked about some of, like, Clapton's, a lot of people, you know, love Clapton's Cream era and his mm-hmm. heavy rock era. And this next era of Bowie is the probably one of the most beloved eras, is the Ziggy Stardust.
His glam rock.
Flamboyant. Yes, he created his own. Yes, in his, one of his managers said to him, he says, if you can't be yourself, be somebody else. And it kind of got him thinking. And he created this character, and he gets together with one of my favorite guitar players ever, Mick Ronson, and they do this amazing thing, right? Just absolutely. Ziggy Stardust and Spiders from Mars.
I mean, some I think that's stuff. A lot of people's favorite. Unfortunately, he really got consumed with that character. He became that character, and it really screwed him up. But he created great music.
Yeah, I think that's the sort of like thing that a lot of people say. That's, it just feels a shame that like they didn't do that a little bit, because it is so good and so different and so cool that they didn't do enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they should have done a couple more records. But if you're screwed up in your head, you're screwed up. But real quick, you know, famously, you know, Bowie has the two different eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people think that he has two different colors. It's not. He does not have two different color eyes. One eye is permanently dilated because when he was young, him and a chum from school got in an argument over a girl that they both liked. And this guy punched David in the face.
Oh.
And he hasn't been there.
Yeah, messed up his eye, and I've seen this guy interviewed recently, about the time, right towards the end of Bowie's life, you know, 20, Bowie passed away in 2017.
Ish.
And this guy was still, he's like, I feel so bad. He says, David was my friend. He's still my friend. It breaks my heart every time I look at his face that I did that to him. He says, he could have lost his eyes. This guy felt really bad. But that's what happened. So the one eye was permanently dilated. So it gave him a kind of a crazy look. It kind of worked for him, though.
Yeah.
It added to that sort of mystique.
And where's that girl now?
I know. Aladdin Sane was the next sort of incarnation. It lacked the predecessor's defined personality and backstory, representing Bowie's ambiguity about the entire Ziggy experience, as well as the state of his career from his rising fame. The conflict found his representation and the lightning bolt down the middle of his face. This is a very famous look for David Bowie.
It's my favorite.
A lot of people try to pull this off at Halloween. Katie Simone, who was co-hosting with me for a while, you know, did that for Halloween.
That's cool.
And she said that she got so pissed because everybody's like, oh, you're doing Kiss.
Oh, my gosh. I'd be irritated too, though.
Do you know Katie, Eric? Do you know Katie?
Yeah, I know Katie.
I kind of feel like you should know
she
better.
She wanted to kill people. I felt bad for her.
Luckily, it wasn't me who said that.
The next incarnation of Bowie is the Thin White Duke.
Yes.
Okay, so Jesus, what is with this guy? A.K.A. the lots of cocaine years. Drugs are bad, okay? Bowie grew into the Thin White Duke persona, a nasty character indeed, he said, throughout his years in L.A., of course, L.A., the cocaine central, making first the white boy soul of young Americans, and then a Station to Station, an album that represented both an apogee of his period and logical conclusion. Story goes that he can't remember the recording process. He describes listening to it now as a piece of work by an entirely different person. That is some crazy, wacky stuff.
I do love
stuff.
Young Americans, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Come on.
It's one of my favorites.
But that whole period is great, too. Mm. I mean, you know.
Anytime he was screwed up, it was A-OK.
Yeah. That was the thing that, like, you know, can you have really good rock and roll without the sex and the drugs? I don't know. Eric's like, no comment.
I'm not a musician, so I don't know how that works.
What would you write about?
Yeah, I know. The man who fell to Earth, quite literally, in the sense that Bowie relocated to Berlin to get away from L.A., to get out of the cocaine thing, led him to do things like trying to exercise his swimming pool. Nice. Pretty much nothing Bowie does, as far as his image is concerned, can be considered irrelevant, and thus the choice to adorn the cover of Low with a still form Nicholas Rogues, The Man Who Fell to Earth, in which he starred as an alienated alien. Okay, yes, he did play an alienated alien in the film. Jareth the Goblin King.
Another one of my favorites because I'm a Muppet fan.
This is from the film Labyrinth, and I remember when this came out, and everybody's like, oh my goodness, Bowie's in a Muppet movie, and I was like, what?
Well, we used to call it David Bowie's package, because every time Hoggle was talking to him, he was talking to his penis. I'm like, all right, and there it is again.
But it got a lot of really good reviews. It was like a very different.
Oh, it's a great movie.
Yeah, people were like really kind of impressed. But when you first hear that Bowie's going to be in a Muppet movie, you're like, well, wait a minute.
But it's a different kind of Muppet movie. It's not like Kermit the Frog.
You don't know what it is, go look at it. It's not like
very young Jennifer Connelly stars in it.
It's
well.
Not like the Muppets Take Manhattan.
No,
or Muppet Christmas.
There's
or
great
something.
Songs in it.
Okay, now this is a fun period too. This was like his 80s and 90s period. It's the regular dude with the regular dude band, okay? And he did all this, like, you know, this is the Blue Jean and all those songs that were just good pop songs. He wasn't really doing any kind of weird thing with himself. He was just making good music. Then he became the singer in Tin Machine, which I thought was a very cool band.
I did too.
Yeah, very, very cool. Great guitar.
Like industrial or something.
Yeah,
right?
Reeves Gabriel was the guitar player in that. And that's the thing about Bowie. Just as a side note, he was one of these guys that birthed a lot of cool guitar players. That, you know, Reeves, Mick Ronson, Earl Slick, and a lot of people forget that he really put Stevie Ray Vaughan on the map. on Let's Dance. That's Stevie Ray Vaughan all over that record. Now, they didn't get along. Stevie ended up leaving the tour after a little while, but you know, that's what, you know, that's what kind of like once that happened and Stevie was able to write his ticket. In the mid to late 90s, he became a sort of outsider, a weirdly conceptual industrial inspired work that still makes for rather discomforting listening. The elder statesman, suave, long-haired Soho resident, author of quietly reflective albums like Hours and Heathen. I believe I have Heathen. This was a really cool, both these periods are really cool with him sort of messing around with electronic music and drum and bass. There's some very cool riffs. I put in air quotes there because it's not guitar stuff, but it's like that like distorted synth stuff that's pretty aggressive sounding. So there you are, the 12 phases.
He is the most eclectic.
I mean, just like he might be the top of the list. But you know, when you talk about eclectic artists, you have to mention David frickin' Bowie.
Or doesn't count.
Or doesn't count. Okay, we're sort of running out of time here, so let's quickly maybe just hit a couple others.
All right, I got the Moody Blues on my list.
Go ahead.
Started out as rhythm and blues music on their second album, Days of Future Past. Sorry, I thought I said that wrong. Released in 67, was a fusion of rock with classical music and established them as pioneers in the development of art, rock, and progressive rock, which I know you're a fan of. Not so much me.
Prague.
But I do love Moody Blues.
They reinvented themselves again in the 80s and had big pop hits.
They did more synth pop sounds, produced The Other Side of Life in 1986, which made them the first act to earn each of its first three top 10 singles in the U.S. in a different decade.
That's
kind of a big deal.
That's really neat that you know, they can come back and reinvent themselves and be... wildly successful. I'm going to hit a couple quick here because as we're running down in time, I want to talk about two bands kind of at the same time. I want to talk about The Police, which start out as a kind of reggae punk rock thing.
Yes.
Very cool. Really aggressive. Listen to that first record, man. It's like, it's the three of them. They're hungry. They're lean. They're mean. They're playing it loud and proud. It's really... And then as each record is different, they really never completely repeated themselves. And they're almost genre-defying. Mm-hmm. If you think about it, like, there's some reggae in there, there's some world beat, there's some rock, there's some punk, there's new wave. I mean, they sort of rode the wave of new wave, if you will, but that's a kind of, like, disservice. Because they weren't Cheap Trick or the Cars or Blondie or the Knack, mm-hmm. you know? They were doing very sophisticated music with all this sort of, like, kind of like with a sort of punk edge to it. Very, very cool. Jazz influence as well. Sting goes on to work with jazz musicians, of course, in his solo career. And the other band I kind of want to mention in the same breath is this band is U2. The first, they were kind of on a track with their first three records, you know, Boy, October, and War. And then they do The Unforgettable Fire, which sounds like none of the previous
right,
records.
Yeah.
And it's their biggest record. I mean, you know, if you think Sunday Bloody Sunday was an overplayed song, you know, Pride in the Name of Love
comes out.
And that sounds nothing like the rest of that stuff. That is an amazing album. And then U2 discovers American music. And they put out records like The Joshua Tree and Rattle and Hum, which have all... I mean, Rattle and Hum, they work with B.B. King.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, they're just able to bring it... And then as they move on into the 90s, I mean, they do the Zootropa thing, which is very electronic and kind of dance. They have songs like Lemon, which are really bizarre. And then, you know, they sort of come full circle with All You Can't Leave Behind, with a more of a kind of... their sort of rock... thing. But that, I like that record a lot because I feel like that record kind of brings together what they were doing with Boy, October, and War, and kind of what they did with Joshua Tree and so on. They kind of like, you know, kind of really, really put it all together on there. Again, all along the way, they're monsters. I mean, they were huge hit makers through the 80s and 90s and early 2000s, just like cranking them out kind of no matter what they did. They sort of could do no wrong. And they are one of those few bands like Metallica and a few others that, like, were still, up until the COVID thing, were still playing stadiums.
Mm-hmm.
They were a rock band that could go out and they knew they could sell out three nights at a stadium somewhere.
Legit.
And,
yeah.
You know, that's a pretty big.
And that's a hell of a stage.
Yeah.
Show.
And that's also a pretty big accomplishment.
Yeah.
For a band. So I kind of wanted to mention those two. You got one or two you want to kind of.
Can I chime in with an honorable mention?
Eric, I'm sorry.
How about Pink Floyd?
That's on the list.
I'm sure they were on her list. Yeah, starting out with Sid Barrett and Piper at the Gates of Dawn and Bike. I mean, it was a cross between psychedelic and pop.
See Emily play, yeah.
Almost like they didn't know where their direction wanted to be, and then obviously Sid goes kind of haywire and Gilmore replaces him, and they still did a couple of albums where it was different. Way different than the Pink Floyd we came to know and love. Even Adam Hart Mother, there's some weird stuff on there, and Uma Guma. It was around the Metal album where they really started to find their niche, and that was kind of the predecessor to Dark Side of the Moon, which is where they really took off.
They were considered a mod band in the very beginning, along with like the Kinks and the early Who stuff. I'm sorry, I know Lily put together
a
little thing.
No, it's okay. They considered themselves not tied to any particular form of music. They basically did whatever they wanted to do, and they could do whatever they wanted to do because they made it work. And I mean, even up until some of the last albums, it was still different than anything else that they've ever done. So,
and they were an art production. They were like the music
thing.
And they put all that art behind them, and light shows, and it was more than just music with them, and that was kind of neat to see. I think we've lost a lot of that.
It's a whole package deal with that band, and unfortunately we don't have shows like that anymore, like not really.
Lady Gaga.
Yeah, I mean, now the stage show is mostly to fill in the gap because you can't see the artist, and so it's a way to sell the tickets to the Peanut Heaven, but that's not what they were going after. They were after a package deal.
What's the
artist, hear the music, and see the visuals as well.
Have you ever seen that live at Pompeii?
Yes.
That's really neat. It's a live concert.
Metal album, I think, played, right? With Echoes. Yeah, I love that album.
It's very cool. I'm just going to say one word, and then we're gonna end it.
Just one word?
Because really, this person needs no description, introduction, or anything. I'm just going to say it. Prince.
My boy.
Everything. Rock, pop, funk, soul.
He plays a mean guitar.
He plays a mean guitar, can rap.
He was one with the ladies.
Yeah, and I don't know. His acting is a little questionable, but other than that, I still love Purple Rain. I watch it. Yeah.
It's awful, but I love it.
I grew up with that movie, man.
It's painful to watch Under the Cherry Moon, though.
That's not Lake Minnetonka. Freaking awesome. Okay, I hope you guys had a really good time tonight. We had a lot of fun. Eric, one more time, tell people where to go so they can contribute to Save Our Stages.
It's www.sos2020pgh.org.
All right, very cool.
And thank you two so much, man. I appreciate you guys supporting this whole project. And like I said, it's reaching far and wide. So, it's great that you guys are contributing in your own way. I love that. It's about strengthening the community, and I think
solidarity.
I think that we're all on that route. So
absolutely.
Appreciate you guys.
Absolutely. Thank you, Eric, for being here. Oh, Royal Honey, real quick, tell folks where to find your band. They're kick ass, by the way.
Thank you so much. Yeah, we got a new single coming out on the 26th, so maybe I can get back on here of February. New CD behind that. We're rolling too, but you can go to royalhoneyband.com for all things Royal Honey.
Awesome. Guys, I want to give one more shout out to our sponsor, Wolf's Customs. Go to wolfscustoms.online and get a great custom paint job done on your guitar, bass, ukulele, swinet, whatever it is that you play. It'll help you stand out on stage. It goes a long way to creating that sort of like cool stage presence, your own personality, if you will. Everybody has the sunburst, the seafoam green, the black, whatever, you know what I mean?
The white pearl.
Yeah, the white pearl, all that. this is a way to kind of get yourself to stand out a little wee bit. And of course, Rock Rage Radio. We love you guys. Thank you so much. One of the reasons why we have such a great audience is because of Rock Rage Radio. Please go to rockrageradio.com. And if you could take one more link before we go, I'm so sorry, guys, so many links. But if you love what we do and you want to get more involved with this and you want to know about our community, because we've been talking to Eric and I'll doing all stuff that I forgot, we have our own community. You want to go to lulombardimusic.com, free EP. I send out weekly emails with all kind of really cool information about rock and music. And we have our own private Facebook group, lulombardimusic.com. And with that, I want Lily to tell you about her show on Rock Rage Radio.
It is Hot Licks with Lily Six on Rock Rage Radio, 6 p.m. Eastern on Thursdays, every single Thursday. And you can find that at the free app that you can download on your phone, or just go to rockrageradio.com.
Just go to rockrageradio.com. Check it out.
That's what I do.
Love it. All right, guys. Have a wonderful day. We'll catch you guys soon. Eric, thank you for hanging out. Lily, have
thank
a great
guys.
Day. And we'll see you guys all on the next Ludinia Rock and Roll Circus.
Woo!